I am very unversed in the new Ghostbusters movie. I've heard that it's just getting a lot of hate, but it's actually not that bad of a movie.
I've yet to see it.
Yeah, me too. I'll probably wait for DVD on that one.
I don't know for that. I might rent it.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, my spouse is, you know, a librarian, so she always puts us, like, first on the list for all the new releases, so we don't even own anything, really, except, like, old classics, like Princess Bride.
I just started buying everything on Google Play.
Yeah.
Like, I just buy everything there now because I'm tired of stuff. Like, because you know my scary plan, right? I'm going to, like, buy a bus and live in it and drive around. I'm just getting rid of everything. So, that's the plan. I'm just going to get my level 2, and I'm going to be judge for hire, and I'm just going to drive around
my little bus. That's not a bad idea. Just Midwest bussing around, making money on the weekends.
Like that. But this is not a podcast about my tiny house exploits. That's talktinytome.com. Plug the different show.
Is that a real thing?
Real thing. We haven't done a show in like a year though, so it's kind of real, but it's a fun little show. I highly recommend checking it out if you have not checked it out and you're interested in that kind of stuff at all.
But this is tiny house.
Oh god, I love it so much. I cannot wait.
I want a real house that's just made like a tiny house, so I just have storage everywhere for all the stuff, but then also have a space for entertaining people. And, you know, room to do all the stuff I want to do.
If you take that tiny philosophy and, like, put it in a full-size house, it's just insane.
Exactly.
Like, you can see all sorts of cool stuff, like this, the cubbies and bookshelves and stuff built into stairs and, like, tables that just, like, go into the floor and they're, like, a dance table. Oh, it's so much.
Have you been to IKEA yet?
I don't go to IKEA. I'll build everything myself.
IKEA and KC actually has a tiny house section.
Does it really? Yeah. I may have to go look.
Obviously, I wouldn't buy anything from there because it's, you know, IKEA stuff. And if you can build stuff, it's always going to be better. But it also gives you ideas. Stick around in their tiny little house they have up.
Yeah, there's like a ton of builders in the Kansas City area that I need to actually look into. Because my wife is afraid that I'm just going to set the bus on fire and it's going to explode, I guess. So, I don't know. I still think I could buy a bus and I can do it. That's what YouTube is for. YouTube teaches us everything.
That's what we've been house shopping past couple of weeks, kind of in the background of the near future that's going to happen. So, I keep telling Anne that, you know, all the problems of every house we can just YouTube fix. Just like watch YouTube videos and it's fine.
You really can basically do everything, except for you have to be, like, licensed electrician or a certain wattage. But that's where you just switch everything to 12-volt, and you don't care. Wattage is 12-volt, and it's fine. You can do whatever you want. Anyway, not a podcast about tiny houses. We are about Magic the Gathering. This is, in fact, episode 49, the one where Travis is missing. Obviously, in case you haven't figured it out, Joey's here. Joey is my good friend. Why don't you tell people about yourself just a little bit, Joey?
So I've been a member of the Magic community for what feels like forever. I think the first competitive event I did was during Darksteel. Been playing a little bit longer than that, you know, in middle school style. So Scaled Worms and Llanowar Elves and... I think the, ooh, nice, very solid. I think my favorite, like, middle school deck was Terravor Land Destruction. I somehow got myself a hold of 3 Terravors and then just stone rained people out on the middle school lunch table quite a lot. Since then, I've played, you know, off and on for 10 years or so, and then opened Goblin Games in Manhattan almost 2 years ago. It was in January of 2015 that we actually opened the doors, but, you know, it's been 2 years since we were definitely going to do it, so it feels like 2 years.
So, if you're longtime listeners of the podcast, you guys hear me often talk about, like, the PPTQs and that we have stuff coming up. Joey's, in fact, the arena that we do all the planning together and advertising together. Joey's actually a pretty big part, invertly, of the show. He may not know this because I don't think he's ever listened to an episode of the show.
I have not.
he gets a lot of free advertising through the show, and that's advertising is finally starting to pay off. I want to give one more shout out. We had a couple more viewers/listeners come visit recently to the show. So very cool. It was awesome meeting you guys.
Oh man, that's
and
awesome.
I hope you'll continue coming to the different shops. And now in the future, we'll have to try to get Joey on more often. He's kind of like our backup now, I think.
Cool.
He volunteered one time, so now he's like
now I'm locked in.
Promised forever. That's right. That's how it works. It's kind of like how you get someone permission to use your bank account one time, and now they're just like an automatic cosigner on your account forever. So congratulations. Welcome to the family. We have a big show. As usual, we're going to have Troll Cards of the Week. We're going to talk some more about Kaladesh because the full spoiler came out. Last week, we recorded like 6 hours before the whole Masterworks series came out. So we could talk a little bit about that and what you think that's going to be, ramifications as a shop owner versus a collector versus the hybrid that you happen to be of both. I'd like to talk about how you're just a cutthroat little bitch when it comes to playing Magic. And, of course, I want to talk about Sealed and Commandered stuff. So we got a busy show. We'll try to keep it relatively succinct, about an hour. I know Joey's got a lot of stuff to do. And I need to masturbate furiously and stream some video game. So my troll card this week is Glimmer of Genius. I don't know if you've seen this card. It's a new card from Kaladesh. It's an instant, a blue, and 3 generic mana. Scry 2, then draw 2, and you get 2 energy counters out of the deal. I think this is going to be an amazing card. Your tilt. But instant speed card draw has that psychological advantage, I think, where you hold up counter spells, and then, all right, we're not going to do anything. I'm going to draw some cards. But this gives you the advantage of looking at 4 cards. So this is my troll card of the week. I think it's going to be amazing. I don't know, Joey, what do you think? Is this going to be a great card out in the new standard?
I definitely think it has very good potential. Anytime there's instant speed card draw, somebody's going to try it out. What was the card name again? Let me read it.
Glimmer of Genius. I put a link in there in the show notes for you. Because I'm a helper. Maybe
it reminds me of Foresee. Very similar card. I think Foresee was a sorcery, though, and that got a little bit of play.
Yeah, it was a... And it also didn't have the advantage of knocking out 2 energy.
Yeah, it's like, scribe.
Like, the curse has its...
cards.
So this habit of just, like, upping the power level of cards, I think this is one of those.
Yeah. It doesn't take 6, like for C can if you're looking for something specific, but I think in standard, definitely very playable if there is any sort of blue X control shell.
Sounds like we're trying to put together a blue white control because of the new Wrath, yeah. I guess, is very good. I'm not particularly impressed, but.
Yeah, I'm pretty neutral on the Wrath. It reminds me a lot of End Hostilities from Cons. Which was very hyped at the beginning. It's destroy all creatures and things that were attached to them, so it blew up auras and equipment, but it got very little play. I think a lot of that was because right after it got printed, you got Crux of Fate, which was destroy all of your stuff, leave my dragon in play, which is a little bit better. So we'll see this time around.
Well, I suppose if you have the option of having 8 Wraths in your deck, even if they're 5 mana, so the white Gear Hulk, Agate, I think, right?
Yeah, Cataclysmic.
Cataclysmic Gear Hulk. that guy does the Tragic Arrogance, I think. Everyone picks one thing.
It's Cataclysm.
It's Cataclysm. Oh, duh. Da-da. Okay. So, but, I mean, you have, you know, essentially four rafts in the format, so I think it's going to be interesting. Like, we haven't had that many good rafts in the format in a long time. We had, what, like, the Dragons one?
Yep. Crux of Fate. Languish.
And Languish. So, like, they're close. They're near misses. I guess these are also, you know, kind of near misses, but...
Yeah, they keep trying to ride what'll actually get played and what won't.
Exactly. And I don't know. I was a big control player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, become this mid-range son of a bitch, I think, over the not too long. So, like, right now, my standard deck is still Pressure Tentacles, but that'll be changing with Kaladesh, I think. And go back to my true love of Is It Artifacts.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
Is your troll card this week, sir?
Can I do two?
It could be from anywhere. It doesn't have to be. Yeah, you can.
I've got two from Kaladesh specifically. So, the first one is going to be Aether Flux Reservoir, because that card is hilarious, and I definitely want to brew around that for standard. It also has ridiculous implications in Commander, because it's you put it in Aloro, the guy that gains two life every upkeep, and pretty much you play it, and just for the rest of the game, you can just like kill a player at instant speed, which is hilarious. It also could get played in Modern Soul Sisters as 4 mana, so it's a little awkward in that deck, but like a 1 or 2 of maybe in your sideboard, and you can just kill people whenever you want. So I think that is great in a lot of really fun things, but what I want to do for standard is do like a mono green ramp deck, and you've got Jotty Offshoot, you've got Retreat to whatever the green one is, Kadzu something. That landfalls gains 2 life, and then you're like first couple turns you just play land, gain life. Then the intro deck rares, which are real wacky and only legal in standard because they're in intro decks, which is kind of a new thing. But it's like a 4 mana rampant growth that puts a land into play, and then it goes and finds your Nissa, which a lot of people are hating on, but if you look at that card, it's almost impossible to kill. It's 5 mana, 5 loyalty, it's up 3 for 3 life. So if you just tick it up, just keep ticking it up, it goes up ridiculously high really fast. I forget what the actual Nissa is called, but it's the intro deck Nissa.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Interrupt you 1 second. What is your Kylo Ren wearing?
Oh, he's wearing a Goblin Game. He's wearing a Goblin Games beanie.
A Goblin's Game beanie. Yeah. Oh my god, I can't beat that. That's not fair. I don't have a Goblin Games beanie.
We keep them in the back. We hide them. They'll come out here pretty quick, though, because we've got winter coming up again. Let's see. So there's, like, probably a really goofy mono-green ramp deck that just gains a million life. And then you have the Aether, I'm blanking on what it's called now, chargey thing.
Aether Flux Reservoir?
Yeah, Aether Flux Reservoir. And you shoot them for 50, or Catcher Ulamog, because it's a ramp deck. Like, I think there's something really fun there. Because when I was playing the red-green ramp deck, what I would always lose to was just, like, the shitty mono-red or red-blue burn decks. And there's a lot of tools for beating those now, so that makes me happy. And also, Aether Flux Reservoir.
Yeah, my son is a big fan of life gain. Like, he'll just life gain for no reason. and we already have, like, this colorless mono-green Eldrazi list.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of figured that these will basically just, like, slam right in there with whatever miscellaneous crap comes out of rotation. I think it'll just slam right in. And then his sideboard has the offshoot and the landfall enchantment that gains you life and all that stuff. So that'll probably just come right into the main.
Yeah.
And so I think we're probably on the same lines of a deck, which means it's probably a real bad plan.
Oh, yeah,
that's
absolutely
what my son wants to do. We're here to get people.
And then my second one for this set is definitely going to have to be Panharmonicon, which is like, what's it called?
Your triggers go off a second time, right?
Yeah, you have an extra trigger on everything. It's like creatures and artifacts entering the battlefield. I think is how it's worded.
If an artifact or creature entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. Literally thousands of words.
Yep. It's really kind of oddly worded, too, because it's not just the creature entering the battlefield. It's any permanent. So, like, if you have aura shards, you get an extra aura shards trigger, even though it's from an enchantment, not an artifact or creature, things like that. I've already seen one bad infinite combo in standard with it. Because of energy, there's like something, I forget how, what you do, but you need like two of those and something really bad. I don't remember, but,
I think there's going to be an awful lot of these kind of things, that doubles up. I go straight to like Cloudstone Curio. That's one of my favorite cards like that. That's going to be nuts. So one of my pet decks is Wild Pair in Modern. I've been working on it for a while. So, like, this could easily work its way in, I think, into my Modern Pair deck. Just, like, you know, play a terrible Flash 2-2. Go get, like, the Counterspell Snake, Mystic Snake, and then, like, some other value creature off of casting one guy. I think there's a lot of interesting possibilities with this card.
Mystic Snake's actually pretty funny. And it's another one. This card especially is another one that goes in multiple formats. Definitely standard. Definitely commander. It's the rings, or no, it's Drownic Resonator. Is like two to play, two to activate, and it copies one. So this is basically that same card, but it does it for every trigger instead of once a turn. So the power level for commander is very, very high. I don't see too much for it in Modern or, you know, Legacy, obviously, because it's 4 mana. But it's wacky enough that you never know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential if people can get over that 4 mana hurdle.
Yeah, and Standard is, and Commander especially, doesn't care if it's good enough.
Not at all. Yeah. Well, Let's just jump right in. We've been talking a lot about Kaladesh. Let's just talk some more about it. What are you thinking? Like, is this going to be the money set for you guys for the year? Is Eldritch Moon or Jodbin a cash cow? Like, what are you thinking?
So, I will say that the game definitely changed with Battle. Battle for Zendikar and Oath with the Expeditions were really, really good for us. Shadows felt much more like a normal set, same with Eldritch Moon, that there wasn't much going on in them because it was right after full art lands in every pack and the chance for Expeditions. Like, I still have a handful of guys who will just keep buying BFZ, just, you know, playing that game, hoping to get something good. And I think I was actually really surprised. I know there was an internet rumor that Innistrad was going to have Echoes and reprint Snapcaster, and Lily basically is Expeditions, kind of like they're doing in this set. And was pretty surprised when they didn't, because I'm sure Wizards especially had a huge market upswing with BFZ and Oath because of that. Like, we went through probably twice as much product as we normally do on standard sets. And then it kind of felt like, you know, business as usual for Shadows, which is like, it's good, but with Expeditions being in every set, I think it's a very good thing for the game because it gets people a chance to get things they wouldn't get. Like, say a new guy is brand new, buying packs, he opens that Mox Opal. He can trade it almost straight across for a whole standard deck, or at least 3/4 of a tier 1 standard deck, something like that. So I think it's really good to get people into the game. It gets reprints out, which is, you know, what Wizards thinks, but really it's it barely change the numbers that are in circulation. It just gives the people who have been playing a long time something to go for. I think it's funny that, like, half of the Affinity deck can be, you know, Expeditions now. Or what are they called?
I think they're called Masterworks in this.
Masterpiece. Yeah, Masterpiece something.
Yeah,
But go ahead.
I read an interesting article. I think it was on MTG Goldfish, like our unofficial sponsor, because they don't send me any money, and I just talk about them constantly. in fact, Joey makes fun of me.
I do.
I think. Maybe it's not Joey so much. Maybe it is you. When I go in there and I'm like, hey, I want to build this deck. And they're like, would you stop looking at MTG Goldfish for every deck you ever want to play at? And I don't know.
My other customers that too. There's a couple guys who always come in with like really janky standard decks. And I'm like, if you're going to net deck, go to MTG Top 8. At least you'll get a good deck out of it.
No. I love them. I love them all day. I think they do exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, they had a really interesting article about how they felt like the Expeditions type thing, the new Masterwork mechanic that they're doing in the sets now, it's kind of like how they're kind of equalizing the pay differential between players. Because often, you know, there's a lot of formats that you just can't get into because they're cost prohibitive. There's decks it's into. But it's relatively inexpensive to draft or to play sealed in the standard format. And if you open this lottery ticket, then it's like a ticket into some of these other formats. And that's very cool. I don't know how well it's going to work. I think that people are going to get burnt out a couple of sets in. Because they're doing it. They made the announcement this is going on from now until whenever they decide they don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So with that kind of in mind, I think they're going to go, you know, the specialness of it is going to fall down, I think. So they're just going to have to continue to raise the bar.
Baseball cards? I know you guys sell a little bit, but they do similar things like jerseys and things like that, like in the card. And it's not really about how excited people are about it. It's more about how rare they are. So if they keep it at the same ratio where it's like one and a half right. A game, I think is like the average. I think it'll, as long as they keep printing good cards, which is another reason why they can do this, they'll still be worth money. The excitement obviously will die down a little bit, but they'll still be expected value in your box, like, which is what I think.
That's my worry, right? Is that they're going to have to continue to find cards that have that expectation that they're going to continue to be good. So, like, this artifact stuff is pretty easy to do now, right? Yeah. And then the next block, let's say you try to do some sort of spells. Now you're trying to cherry spells from Magic's history to reprint that also work in your block. And then the next time, what do? Like, creatures and kind of, like, run out of good themes that you can build around. And the next thing you know, you're just printing good cards at a fancy border for extra money.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think I spent too much time with Todd this last couple of weeks. He has some concerns. As a longtime shop owner, he has seen Hasbro, in particular, buy sports card companies and basically drive them into the ground by making them print too many cards too often.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of concerns about these changes that Wizards of the Coast have been making, with just so many printings in a year.
Yeah.
Our sales are really down. We've kind of talked about this in the past. Sorry if this turns into be a little bit more of a shop owner kind of conversation, but, you know, special guest, special circumstances.
Yeah.
I know that it feels like things are certainly a little bit lower right now than in past years, you know, with the three block, the normal, you know, three sets in a block kind of release. Now we kind of have this. It seems like one every 2.5 to 3 months. Keeping it fresh and alive, but at the same time, like, that's a lot of money to put into a hobby like this.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think I personally like it as a player. There would be times, especially when it was the old standard rotation, that it would just get boring and it wouldn't be worth playing. I think they're trying to keep you engaged more, even between sets like that with Conspiracy, and they announced Modern Masters 2017, so they're going to do that every other year, basically, is what it looks like now. I think they're... So I guess this will be the third time they've done Modern Masters, right?
Correct.
So their first one was way better than they thought it would be. The second one, they printed two or three times as much, and it still sold out. I remember we had it for maybe a month and a half total, which is great. That's like, I think that's like perfect. If they do a Modern Master set the same size, kind of like Eternal Masters again. Eternal Masters, we had a bunch of. I don't know how you guys were on Eternal Masters, but...
It kind of went so-so. Like, we had a bunch, but it moved better than I kind of thought it would, because Eternal Legacy is not a format here, really. A lot of our guys just, they weren't playing then, so they don't have a lot of cards, so they don't want to spend the money to get into it. And now with Wizards, of course, you know, nixing any store that hosts a proxy tournament.
Yeah.
Things like we used to do the charity event every year when we allowed the proxies, and that was the way that, you know, one of the ways that we did our charity raising event. We can't do that anymore. So, yeah, well, I don't know.
So on that note, I actually called Wizards. I'm sure it was a very big deal, because they basically reprimanded a store, or told a store that they would reprimand them if they kept running that big event. Really, the only issue is if you run it in Wizards Event Reporter. Because I was under the impression before this, as long as you ran it and it's casual, it was fine. So I called them. I was like, I've run proxy events before as casual events. I was under the impression that's what we were supposed to do. The lady on the line basically told me that in the eyes of like their legal team, there's no difference between Sharpie on a Plains and a counterfeit from Asia, like a Chinese counterfeit sold as a real card. After I had that conversation with her, there was an article up that basically said, without saying it, that as long as you don't use were, and as long as no one is trying to sell the single, like in the second market as a proxy, they don't care. So how I have taken that is I don't use Word to run my proxy events, and I kind of don't really advertise them too much. Like, just tell the guys in the store, don't put it on Facebook. And I don't think there's really anything they can do. Like, I assume that if it ever gets big and somebody wants to make a big fuss about it, we might get a warning. But as long as you're not using Word, I think it's not actually an issue.
I don't know. I heard somebody complain that Wizards of the Coast actually took away their preferred status for like 6 months, which basically shut down their store. Since, like, they were just a Magic store, and it basically just killed them.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially forced a business to close because of this policy. So I don't know. I know that it does do some stuff, and therefore it kind of makes our legacy non-existent, basically. Which I find to be really ironic, because it doesn't seem to affect our commander players one bit. They'll proxy the hell out of anything they want.
Yep.
And I look at that, and I just need to play with these proxy cards, and they're like, well, before I spend all this money on stuff, I want to make sure that this works. I don't know. It just kind of bothers me when I see that happening. So, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, I think because of if they basically give stores a green light to have proxies at events, it lets the like lawsuits where they're suing people for actually selling fakes gives them like a leg up in their arguments for them being proxies.
I'm just selling proxies so people can play in these proxy tournaments that you allow. So yeah, I get it. At the same time, it kind of sucks, because that just means there's certain formats that are just dead in my area.
Yeah, we have a very
like if I want to play
graphic of Legacy,
I have to go to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so long story short, I think it's going to be huge. And I know it's one of the most exciting sets for me since I've come back to Magic in Theros. Like, I love artifacts. I love artifact things. One of my favorite cards is Penibus of all time. So I was kind of hoping to see a Penibus in the Masterworks. So maybe next set. Come on. I'll drop like $300 on a Penibus. I don't think I won't. But yeah, I don't know. Anything else that you want to talk about out of the spoilers here that kind of gets you going?
I remember they announced vehicles and I thought this is real dumb.
I really like vehicles.
It looks like the design is pretty solid. Smuggler's Copter, I think, has a lot of potential for standard. What I don't see is, like, I wanted them to reprint Nimnite, or, like, a Nimnite reprint in this set or the next set would be huge for all the Crew 1 stuff.
Right.
Because it's just, you know, free drop, get your crew in there. Or maybe something like Immolating Firehound, something like that, that had, like, Phyrexian mana, pump it a power. So you can do real weird things with that. I would like to see an interaction with that. I don't think I've seen too much of that in the actual block mechanics yet.
What do you think of the, what we're talking about crewing? What do you think of, how's Werewolf Robot Dog doing there? Like, are people excited for the Werewolf Dog to, like, drive their awesome spaceships? Or?
Oh, man, I didn't even think about that, actually. This is the first time I've heard of that. I think the biggest crew is Crew 3. Oh, no, there's
no, there's a Crew 5.
For 6 mana?
Like, our guys were, like, crazy excited for this Crew 5 and the Werewolf Dog. Where'd it go?
Yeah, Crew 5.
We talked about it last week, I think.
Demolition Stomper, 6 mana, 10-7. Can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. Crew 5. It's an uncommon, which seems kind of odd. 10-7's an uncommon. This is the magic we play today, fellas.
That's right. Well, like, it drives your Sovereign Consul Airship. It drives everything. I think 5 is the best with that one card.
That is kind of cute. I like that.
So, I don't know. I like the idea. I kind of discussed it a little bit again on the show. So, for those of you who are catching recaps of stuff, sorry, but that's just how it is. We had a couple of guys that kind of also poo-pooed vehicles when they're first kind of spoiled.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're okay tapping creatures for mana with Convoke spells, mm-hmm. right? And you're okay tapping creatures for activated abilities, mm-hmm. and you're okay tapping mana to turn an artifact into a creature. So how are you having a problem with tapping a creature to make an artifact into another creature?
Like, I think a lot of it is just the fantasy setting. So in like Magic, it's always high fantasy. Obviously, each block has a little different flavor to it, and it's very odd that this one has vehicles, because it's kind of a thing we think is more of a futuristic, not a past or, you know, Magic setting. But I think they actually did a very good job at making it work. Somebody told me that they had tried to fit this in a set before, and it didn't work, so I'm glad that they waited. Because it looks like they got all the rules ironed out to actually make it feel correct. And I'm definitely a fan of vehicles. When they spoil the red-white lady, the driver, master, whatever.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was really hoping that there would be enough vehicles for a commander deck, but I don't know. Maybe after next block.
Yeah, it's going to be real close, isn't it?
I think there's like 10 or 12, so definitely not enough. Something to consist like
that. There's a bunch, but it's close. I'm a big Dungeons & Dragons fan. I don't know if you know this. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons since I was 13. It was my escape from my shitty, shitty life. So I loved it. And a few years ago, Keith Baker, who I've had on other podcasts a couple of times, I'm trying to find my Eberron handbook, like, right here, and it's not, like, it must be in this pile of books over here. That's my D&D books. So I'm a big fan and a huge Eberron fan in particular. And the idea is, you know, in Eberron, you have this high magic world. It's like the technology, which is very much the same kind of vibe that they have here. Mm-hmm. And there you have like airships that fly all over the place. You have what they call the lightning rail, which is basically like trains. They have self-propelled carts. So, like, to me, this is all very high fantasy world. So as soon as I saw it, I'm like, yes, this makes total sense. Yes, 1,000 times.
Yeah.
I see why people have some issues with it, but at the same time, it's like fantasy is a lot of things to a lot of people. And even if this maybe isn't your favorite mechanic, like, try it. Like, maybe you'll do something absolutely insane. Like, you'll turn on a ballista charger with a turned on I'm trying to find a different car that has a power of 3. You know what I mean? Like, the first time you ever, like, Oval Taste Dragster with the activating, like, a 1-1 that you played that turn, and then you turn on, like, another vehicle that can get through, you're just going to be like, yes, this is the moment. I drove my car onto my spaceship, and I killed you. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's going to be so many awesome moments that the vehicles in particular, that it's going to really have that special feeling once people kind of get past that shock.
Yeah.
I'm also really, I really like these puzzle knots. I don't know if you have, see, that's the same face Travis gave me too. I'm going to put that up on the big screen. So my commander right now is Duretti.
Okay.
I like that. I've always liked Goblin Welder and Goblin Welder effects. So these come into the battlefield kind of abilities. I like doing bouncing with the artifacts. Like, I'm thinking about putting together one of the bouncing of artifact popper decks for Magic Online. Mm-hmm. I think these are the same kind of thing. So I'm drawn to the puzzle knot for a different reason. Now, I'm not saying they're good in standard. I'm not saying go out there and buy your playset of these common puzzle knots to do your 2 damage for 5 mana. Mm-hmm. But if you want to be a little tricksy, and I think these will enable a lot of funness. What do you think, other than...
I think the problem with them...
That was a vision.
Is they're 2 mana. If they were 1 mana, all had 2 mana activated abilities, they'd be amazing. They'd be great. You find them with Trinket Mage. Like you said, you could do all sorts of stuff in the momentary blink popper deck with them. But it being 2 drops just seems subpar.
Would they be too good as 1 mana?
What now?
I think they would be almost too good at 1 mana. Like 1 mana, come in, do a... do another damage. Like, that seems almost too good.
I think the red... Let me read them all, because I think a couple of them are too powerful at that point, you're right. Like, the Cogwork Puzzle Knot, the one that makes tokens, makes 0/1s, and it's probably balanced. The... I guess most of them are 3 mana activated abilities, aren't they?
Yeah, most of them I think are. I'd have to dig through them all again. I just happened to be scrolling up and wanted to get your thoughts on them here.
Yeah, I think they would have been fine with a little bit more balance at 1 mana. Obviously, the black one's pretty solid at that amount and probably gets played in every deck. 1 mana, pay a life, draw a card on an artifact with, like, upside down the road. It's very simple. But I think, especially the life one that just makes energy and gains you 3 life, is like way too vanilla. The blue one doesn't even draw you a card; it's just scry 2 and get 2 energy. But I think
that comes into how good the energy deck is in blue. I think it's
that's very true. But the red one, I think the red one is fine at 1 and 2. if you look at what's it called, the shock one from Old Mirrodin, the one that's like one to play, two red to activate, sack it, two damage to something, and then pay its colorless, sack it, draw a card.
Right.
The one that gets played in the shitty prison deck occasionally. Lantern Control. That's what it is.
Lantern Control. Yeah, I don't know. I don't disagree. I think some of them could be a little better and some are a little worse, but I think they're all synergy cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what, when you evaluate them and on them on their own, on their surface, they have a tendency to not really show off the potential they have together. You know, yeah. You have to look for it.
They're definitely one of the like late pick draft cards that does a lot of work in your deck.
Right. Like, you're happy to have one of these at number 22 or 23 in your draft deck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, a couple of other cards. We'll just kind of hit some other big ones that are floating around that are super hyped. Dramatic Reversal. We were kind of talked about this for, like, this much in the pre-show. A blue and a generic instant untap all non-land permanent you control. People seem to be going insane over this card at my local shop. And you were like, what's this card even do?
Yeah, I remember seeing it in spoilers, and I thought it's basically the same card as Turnabout that gets played in, like, the Legacy High Tide deck, but it doesn't untap your lands. But that card also has, you know, pure upside because you can tap your opponent's stuff down and buy yourself a turn. But this one, it's really funny, too. When I first saw it spoiled, I laughed because it's four or five walkers. And it's like, cool, you untap your planeswalkers.
They're the creature planeswalkers.
Yeah.
I think it's got a lot of interesting potential, especially if you're going to say, like, you have a bunch of artifacts down or vehicles down, and you only have, like, one or two creatures to activate it. You can, you know, like we talked about before, chaining your equipment to, or your vehicles, and then untap them all and go to town with the whole team. I think there's a lot of interesting potential. Also, a bunch of surprise blockers are always good. We've seen a couple of figments of artifact mana.
Yeah.
Like I would like to see.
One of the vehicles is a Darksteel Ingot, basically, that turns into a 3/3.
Right. And, of course, we still have the previous set that is not very good, comes into play tapped, and I think it only taps for mana of cards in your mana or in your graveyard or something. You have a little bit of mana from that, so there's some potential in there, but I don't know. Like I said, I don't understand why my local shop seems to be just like, oh, this is the card.
It's also uncommon, which is fun. Not even uncommon.
I don't know. Maybe someone will break it. The other cards that people go in really nuts over locally is Whirler Virtuoso. 3 for a red and a blue and a generic. When he enters the battlefield, you get 3 energy. Pay 3 energy, make a 1/1 colorless Stopter artifact creature with flying. And people are pairing this with Era of Evasion, which is a blue and a generic for an enchantment. Whenever an artifact or an artificer enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay a generic energies. It also has some other flavor text, but that doesn't matter. The idea is that you pay 3 energy to create a 1/1 Thopter token, and then you pay 1 generic to make 2 more energies, and then somehow magically you're supposed to make an additional energy to combo off, essentially, as long as you have generic mana. They're basically calling this the Thopter, the Sword of the Meek combo and standard.
And that's stretching it.
I'm like, sure. Seems okay. Like, I'll play it.
Yeah. If there's another deck that can play with those cards in it, it seems okay. I think that's another one we talked about, the thing that doubles all your triggers. I think that's the infinite combo I've seen. Somebody talk about a standard is something with that Whirler, and I forget what else. Yeah.
Panharmonicon.
Panharmonicon.
Two artifact creatures, and of course. Oh no! You still make one creature, right? Because it's a pay. Yeah, but that would activate twice, so you could pay two mana to make two.
I think it's something that, like, whenever a creature comes into play, you get energy.
Okay.
Maybe it might be an artifact or a different color. I'm perusing the set right now, trying to figure out what it was. Actually, I'll just go to Facebook.
Yeah, I don't know.
See if I can find it.
But basically, it's... Oh, man, I have not looked at some of the artwork for the new land set. Man, that island is sweet. Only it was full art. Okay. Yeah, that seems to be the other big combo around here. I know you're pulling out some details. I don't know. Yeah. I just miss... I'm going to miss Origins, I think, with this set rotates. Like, I'm really going to be... Like, there's so many good Origins cards that are not going to get reprinted in here. That I'm just going to be like, oh, boo.
Oh, man, I can't find a post now. But I did find another one that's possible that's pretty janky. Janky combos. This one's for Modern. It's Liquid Metal Coating. You Liquid Metal Coating your Saheeli Rye. So it's an artifact. And then you tick two down. And then you can make infinite Saheeli Ryes, let the old one die. And then if you have an Alter the Brood in play, you mill them out.
Okay. So...
I saw that on somebody's Facebook post. I was digging for that other combo.
I hate to tell you this, now I need some metal coatings.
We should have some liquid metal coatings.
Okay. Joey's also the shop when I can't find something at the arena because we're just constantly liquidating stuff. I send in these messages. I'm like, so I need this random card, this random card, and this random card. And usually it's like, we probably have that. And then I show up and he's like, well, I have one of that or three of that. But he always comes through sooner or later. I get everything I need. I don't know. Saheeli Rye is probably the card I'm most excited for out of this set.
Really?
Where do you put her on your scale right now?
I don't know. She's good. I think people here are more excited about Dovin Bond, which I am definitely not a fan of. We have a lot of control players here who like taking all our tournaments to time, but there's definitely more interest in him than Saheeli Rye.
Is that just for the gain two life draw card aspect of the control player?
I think so, yeah.
I just want to game. Okay. I want more than anything to, like, plus her -7, like, with her alt, and just go get the Mirrodin machine and put it together and just be like...
Okay,
I've displayed an infinite loop now.
Okay, so the combo is a Whirler Virtuoso, and then one or two of both dosection module or decoction module. Whenever a creature enters, you get an energy, and then Panharmonicon. So you need one Whirler Virtuoso and a total of three of the other two pieces. So either two of the modules or two of the Pharmacons and one of the other. Because then you're getting basically you get three energy for every three energy you pay and a Thopter.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
This plus Sculpting Steel in Modern? Baby.
Yeah. Actually, that's not bad. Throw Sculpting Steel in the mix. I feel like it's a little bit more doable.
Okay, you're back. I'm old school. I like it. I think this set's given us a lot of interesting cards. Enough where I may actually be excited for Modern instead of just like, I'm going to pay the same deck that everyone tells me is terrible, but they tell me never to play another deck ever again, and I like win most of my matches with it. Like, Eldrazi and Taxes,
mm-hmm.
I know that you keep telling me it's not good and I should not play it, But I'm like up. I love it when Joey's like, tell him it's bad. Tell him he's bad and he should feel bad. Joey's just like, yeah, I'm not going to say that. It's his podcast. Tell him he's bad. That's what they're saying back there, aren't they? I can tell. I can't quite hear them, but I believe that to be true. So let's talk just a little bit about Sealed. We both have pre-releases this weekend, along with almost everybody else in the world.
Yep.
And it's going to be awesome. How do you kind of do your Sealed stuff? Like, what are your... what's your mind?
So, especially pre-releases, we do huge events. I think this time around we're doing Max 64 at midnight, and then Max 64 Saturday afternoon. The midnight event, we don't play out. We play four rounds, and then based on points, we pay out packs. Instead of doing two 6 rounds, it ends up being to find an actual winner. But Saturday afternoon, we do that. So it mixes up a lot of people. A lot of people at midnight just want to, like, see the cards as soon as possible, play some games, then go to bed and come back tomorrow. So we get a lot of people who play in both and sleep, you know, 4 or 5 hours.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm one of those guys because I'm the judge. Like, I'm there midnight. I tell people, like, pre-releases are really tough for me because basically I work from, you know, Friday Night Magic until, like, 5 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then I have to be back by noon to work until, because we run 2 different flights on Saturdays. So mm-hmm. basically if I'm out of there by, you know, 9 o'clock, I'm pretty fortunate. And then we run a 3rd event on Sunday or a 4th event on Sunday. So then I'm back again at noon the next day. So it's a long weekend, but it's always awesome.
Yeah.
And I think this particular one is just going to be cram packed. I'm afraid we're going to run out of kits. I don't have an exact number, but
do you guys do a 2 at a giant event?
We try, and like we get all these people who are super excited to come, and then like I get half of them. So I've currently put that to the side. I'd love to do more 2HG, but
we've since Oath, I think, is the set the carrot because Surge was a mechanic. Right. We've been doing a Sunday 2 at a giant, and I think last time we maxed out our store. Obviously, the setup's a little different because you have to have 2 people on a table, so we lose like 30% of our space because of right. seating. But it's filled up the store last time with Eldritch Moon, and that, you know, had no real bearing towards 2 at a giant. I have a judge question for you. What happens when you Immercool someone in 2 at a giant?
Oh, jeez. Do you pick? You probably pick one head.
You do pick one head, but then...
Go ahead. I'm gonna say, I would just assume you pick one head and you take control of... It'd be both players, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you get to... So it targets one player, but you get their whole turn, and then right. they get an extra turn. Like, the 2-headed giant rules say, like, if anybody takes an extra turn or takes control of your turn, you get to do it for both players. So,
and that's why Lloyd hates 2-headed giants.
Yep. There's real wacky stuff like that.
But no, I was actually asking about your particular mindset when it comes to Sealed. Do you try building around the deepest part of your pool? Do you try to build around power cards in particular? Are you one of those guys who goes like super, super deep? And then you're like, look how deep I went. And when you draw, like we have a friend, Dan, I make this joke a lot, but he'll always go super deep. And he either wins every single game or draws 18 of his 20 lands. You know what I mean? He's like that
yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
So what is your mindset when it comes to Sealed?
So I try to build with my pool. That's like the best advice I can give to people. So if I open 3 bomb rares in 1 color and then nothing else in that color, it's just a decision at that point whether you completely cut that color or you play that as your splash color and just have bombs and play like 6 of that basic land type and just destroy your mana base. So I think every pool you have to approach from an open mind. Best advice I can give you is watch your curve. If you have like 2 and 3 mana accelerators, like on slots 2 and 3 mana accelerators, keep that in mind with your curve. it's always just terrible, you know, having like a bunch of two mana mana dorks, but nothing at four is like a thing I see people who build their pool, you know, the first couple times do a lot. It's like, yeah, I got this mana dork that's literally not going to do anything like the entire game, something like that. Bombs, I think, are the first thing you look at. I think there's, I had never heard this before. One of our really old school players told me about an acronym, BRED. Have you ever heard this?
We talked about BRED the last time we talked about our sealed show, and Travis is like, that's stupid, and made a whole new one. And now I can't tell you what it is.
It's bombs, removal, evasion, abilities, like activated abilities or, you know, death touch. And then I forget what the last D is. Just junk. I remember it's
something. I said Travis made a new one. I have to go back through the old episodes at samusgrobo.com to tell you what it is. But he like made a new acronym for BRED, but it was completely different. And where he focuses on like evasion creatures first.
Yeah. I think also that acronym only works for some sets. Like, there's definitely like a learning curve for each set. Like, a lot of times the bombs won't be good enough. Like, I remember old Zendikar. I don't know if you played any of that. It was very, very heavy aggro. So you could have that like 6-drop dragon that like sweeps their board when it takes damage, something like that. But it's just never going to come out because I'm playing Steplinks and played a Geopedes the first turn, and you're going to be at 4 on turn 5, like things like that. So
yeah, we have a player here who likes, specifically on pre-releases, he's super, super aggressive. Mm-hmm. He'll even go like deep 3 colors, deep 4 colors to be just as aggressive as he possibly can get away with, which just feels like opposite of what you would consider an aggressive deck. Like, normally aggressive decks are very consistent to get those early drops and get the pumps up. But he'll just play like whatever. He just wants all the 1 and 2 and 3 drops he can cram into his deck. It doesn't matter. And then any combat tricks to just force damage through.
Yeah.
And he usually does very, very well at these pre-releases. So
that makes-
I don't know. I'm terrible at pre-releases. Literally the worst. But I did have an awesome sealed last week. I wish I had brought the whole deck down, but it was in my truck and I couldn't be bothered. It was too far. But it's got a cute little story, and that's what this podcast is cute little stories. So we were hanging out. It was wanted to do like 3 packs of Innistrad and then 3 packs of Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, I don't care. So everyone got their packs except for my son and myself, and I picked my packs out and I set them down in front of me, and he starts complaining that he wanted 3 packs with pictures of Liliana on them, and there were no more left in the box. So he reaches over, grabs one of my packs, and then throws one of his at me. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I put the packs away, I go sit down, and I open up the Moon pack that he threw at me, and I'm like, oh, you mean this Liliana? Is that the one that you were looking for? As I cracked the Liliana. So I'm like, bam, here's the Liliana you wanted. Which was really awesome. And then I started opening my packs. The guard is aid. And I had the Boon of Immercool. And I had, what's the Moonlight spell? Basically the fancy pacifism that you can like move the... You can sacrifice a permanent to move around. I had one of those. I had 2 of the one from Moon that you pay like 5 mana and you exile the creature you enchant. And then I had 2 of the guys who brings enchantment, Anna, and a couple other bring guys from life spells so I could like play them. Like I had this amazing enchantment synergy and I felt completely... unable to lose until I basically made some bad decisions based off of the opponent I was playing and ended up taking, I think, 3rd because tiebreakers and shit. But I don't know. I am a big person. I try to build for synergy in my sealed pools, and I think that's wrong for pre-releases. I think you want to play aggressive as possible at pre-releases in particular, because people are going to be slow and like play with all their fancy new things. And I think you just want to be like, if you're there to win, I think you just want to be like, curve, kill you. Ano, are you still there? Because you like, your picture's frozen. Nope, he's gone. All right, well, we'll see if he comes back. Let me send him a invite again. Invite himself. That's not the right thing. Anyway, I have to make a note that this is screwing up all over the place. That is the disadvantages of a live show. All right, invited him back. Anyway, I guess this is as good a time as any to throw out our plugs, samusgrobo.com, for all the past episodes and current episodes of the podcast. The number 2trolls@gmail.com if you'd like to send us an email. Twitch.tv/samusgrobo for the stream.
I'm back.
Hey, welcome back. Yep. Welcome back. I'm just doing a little bit of the pre-show ending plugs. Twitter.com/SamusGrobo. Travis is TurtlePower319. Joey, plug your stuff. You disappear on me again.
I've got our Facebook, Goblin Games MHK, at the end of a Facebook URL. We've got an Instagram, which I think is the same, Goblin Games MHK. Got couple random events coming up. Modern GPT for Denver, November 12th. The Legacy Grand Prix trial is going to be December 10th. And right around sometime in there, we haven't put an iron out date yet, we'll be doing our yearly Christmas Chaos Draft, which we do a kind of big blowout for. Do crazy prizes. Usually 32 people, something like that.
Yeah, we try to do, like I said, we try to do some sort of Christmas event to raise for our Christmas family every year. Yeah. So I haven't quite figured out how we want to do that this year, but I will figure out something sooner or later.
It's coming up. Great Christmas stuff in Walmart.
God, like, I can't believe it. It feels like it's years away still, but my wife was, we went on our pokey hunt for lunch like we always do, and she's like, so work wants my vacation request for the holiday by Friday, and I'm like, oh, now I gotta sit down and figure out what our plan is gonna be for the whole rest of the year. Unfair to me. So did you have anything else you wanted to kind of add, Joey, before we got into our closing game?
No, I think that's it.
So this week's game, we're going to basically do the in-bed. We're going to read flavor text from the new set, and we are going to basically add in-bed to the end. Try to make each other laugh. So we're going to pick the best flavor text, and then we're going to read one. So I'm going to go first because I played them before. Crash or win the race, possibly both, in bed. Oh, I got a smirk. That's close. That's close.
Is that a point? I've got a pretty solid one.
All right, let's hear it.
It won't be small forever in bed.
That's pretty good. I like that one. Good luck.
As long cusk cub.
Good morning, children. Good morning, children. Please open your ether vials and ignite your gauntlets in bed. That's relevant right now because all the kitty diddling that's going on. The follow up got you. I'm gonna call that a point.
We'll go Dukara Scavenger, which is the teeth marks add character in bed.
I'd go over that one. That was really good. The consulate automation contains only the most impressive specimens in bed.
There we go. That's good. That's good.
We have to have one where we actually bust into laughter, though, so we're going to have to step it up and move this stuff around so I can read.
Here's a good one. This one's for my mom, and this one's for me in bed.
Oh, that's... I don't even know what kind of porn we'd find if we played an internet browser history game on your machine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man, he has friends in places both high and low. All seem to owe him favors in bed.
Nice. We'll do unlicensed disintegration, which is I'd stand back if I were you in bed.
That's pretty good. I could see how that would be a problem. I don't know how this one's going to work out. Part feline, part primate, all trouble in bed.
No good.
All right, one more. Hit us with the last one, and then we'll have your closing thoughts for this show.
I had one more.
God, there really should be like a Hydra one. That's just like perfect.
Let's see. None of the knots have.
Wait, I got one more. Whoa there, easy. We're just going to take a little detour in bed.
That's pretty good.
I'm going to call that 2 points for me.
Solid.
Alright, Joey. Well, like I said before, Travis always is supposed to have like these thoughtful closing thoughts about whatever it is that's going on. Like, I think he had beautiful comment about autism and overcoming addiction. He also had this beautiful soliloquy about giving to charity and helping the children. So let's hear words of wisdom from Joe.
Well, I'll keep it on topic with Sealed, since that's what most of what we talked about today.
Okay.
Best advice I can give you is watch your curve. Troll on.
Troll on, everybody.